For WILL, I'm Victoria Shepherd, and this is Mid-American Gardener, where we love to talk about anything connected to gardening in central Illinois. This week, I'm joined by Chuck Voigt. Chuck has been an academic professional on the University of Illinois faculty since November 1988. His specialty is in culture and management of vegetable and herb crops. He has been a member of the International Herb Association since 1991 and is also a member of the Garden Writers Association. Welcome, Chuck. Thank you for coming in.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here.
So, I heard on the news last night that in 1982, this area of the country received over 13 inches of snow. One, how crazy is that? And two, do you remember it? Were you here then?
In 1982, I don't have a strong memory of that one. I remember the blizzard of 1967 when I was in high school.
How many inches came then?
24.
In April? Was that April?
No, that was in January.
Oh, okay. I was very surprised that a lot of snow fell in April.
But. Well, yeah, they tell me my older sister was born on the 22nd, and there was snow on the ground the morning that she was born.
Of April?
Of April.
Wow. This crazy... weird Midwestern weather.
Well, the East Coast has been even worse this year, so I'm kind of happy to be here with our weirdness as opposed to the weirdness that's happened in New York and Boston and some of those places where it's just been horrendous, like four blizzards in 3 weeks. It was just crazy.
Now, is this weather playing havoc with our vegetables?
If it is, it's because it's kind of holding us back. We would like to have some things planted by now, but with the combination of moisture when we don't really need it too badly, and then the fluctuating from warmer than normal, which we had a while back, to colder than normal now, it just kind of puts things off. And then at some point later in April or May, when things get favorable, we're going to feel like we're way behind on everything. And we feel like that enough without having the weather pushing us in that direction.
Well, we've got quite a few questions to run through, so we can find out what is actually good to be planting now. But you worked on your family farm way back when, right?
I did.
Was that when you realized you wanted to be involved in horticulture? What made you specialize in vegetables and herbs?
Well, I think the whole thing, as far back as I can remember, I've had things in the garden. I remember when I was three, I got to plant radishes and nasturtiums, and I remember running in with the first radish that I had, and was just prouder than the dickens of it. So it might have started that long ago. Later on, I was in 4-H, and showed vegetables at the Kankakee County Fair, and did quite well with that. I remember once. We were sitting in the grandstand there, and the local radio station came around and was interviewing people. And I don't know if I had a purple ribbon or what drew them to me, but in the course of the conversation, they asked me what I wanted to be, and I was like 7 or 8, and I said horticulturist, and it was like okay,
wow.
that kind of stopped them. It may have started that far back, you know. While I was here at the U of I, I kind of got diverted back and forth between performing arts and horticulture, which is quite a distance, actually. But I found that the two things together made me happy. So
now you mentioned performing arts. What do you do now?
What do I do now?
Yes, are you still doing anything?
I still sing from time to time. It's been a while since I've done a wedding. Sadly, I do funerals because anybody who was older than me when I was young is getting pretty old. And it's a nice thing to do for a family to sing in a funeral. It can be difficult if you know the people
sure.
at all. I do that. I try to get around to gardens, and I have this idea that I want to sing in a lot of gardens while I'm retired, but I haven't been getting that done, so I don't know if that's going to happen or not. But in the back of my head, I want to sing in as many gardens as I can just for the joy of it.
See how many you can do.
Yes.
Well, spring's coming, hopefully. Anyway. So let's run through a couple of questions that we've got. Okay. Just as a reminder to listeners, if you'd like to leave a question for our panelists and experts, you can call and leave a voicemail. The number is 217-300-8224. You can also reach us by our usual email, which is yourgarden@gmail.com, or search for us on Facebook. Look for Mid-American Gardener. So, Chuck, the first question, I wonder if you would like to take the lead on this.
Sure. Bryant is asking, I live in Chicago and want to know what spices I can grow to share with my friends and family. Can you offer any advice? Well, it is a little complicated, and maybe it isn't. The line between what is an herb and what is a spice can get a little blurry sometimes. Generally speaking, we think about herbs as being vegetative parts of plants, mm-hmm. leaves and stems, and maybe a root or something. And spices we think more of in terms of seeds and flowers and maybe the bark off the stem. So it can be a little complicated, but given that's the definition we're going to talk about, you know, some of the seeds that you might be able to grow would be things like dill or coriander or caraway, although caraway is a biennial. You have to grow it, overwinter it, and then it flowers a second year.
Oh, really?
Yes, really. And then if you want to get really creative, you could get a rhizome of ginger that's nice and firm and it looks like it has nice growing points on it. You can grow ginger in the hot part of our season, and it actually gets bigger, and I don't know if you'd have enough to give away or not. But, you know, and there are all kinds of things that you can grow, but...
growing in bulk is probably harder.
Yeah, and generally spices, you think more of hot tropical climates where a lot of those are grown. I think probably it's more of an herb, but I have a bay tree,
mm-hmm.
and they actually overwinter pretty well.
So you just bring them inside?
Just bring it inside and then put it back out and gradually reacclimate it to the sunshine. And then as the summer goes on, by the time it's used to, you know, seeing ultraviolet light again, you can put it out in the hottest part of your patio and it thinks it's back home in the Mediterranean and puts on a lot of growth. And then what I do is when I bring them in the fall, I just cut it back because it's kind of outgrown the space where I squeeze it into in the winter. And then when I do that, I have bay leaves to give to Sunder and Jan, to anybody who wants them.
And you can just dry those, right?
They dry incredibly well. But the thing most people have never tried is fresh bay leaf, which is incredibly more complex than the dried one. A lot of the aromatics just go into the air as it's drying. So you lose like a vanilla part of it, a floral part, a citrus part. My favorite thing to do with that, and we've only done it a few times, is to take fresh bay leaves and steep them in a simple syrup,
mm-hmm.
and just let them sit there, and then strain, you know, get the bay leaves out and strain it off. And then you have this wonderful bay flavored syrup, and it's wonderful over vanilla ice cream.
Ooh.
And things of that nature. So people just don't think of that when they see that kind of one note song that you get from dried bay leaves, which is a good note, but it's not the full breadth of
so
what
try fresh bay yeah. as well.
Yes.
Okay, great. Our next question comes from Melvin, and he says that he has a compost of lots of material, including leaves, grass clippings, plant trimmings, eggshells, coffee grounds, and vegetable scraps. He has one big pile of completed compost that he covered during the cold months with a plastic tarp to control weeds. And he wanted to know if, one, this will hurt the compost, and he also has a current composting pile that he put a plastic tarp over to encourage more heat over the winter. Is this okay? What do you think?
I think basically it probably is okay. You're kind of looking at two different things.
Mm-hmm.
To keep the weeds down in the warm part of the season, a black or some sort of an opaque tarp would be better, because then the weeds don't get the sunlight, and so it discourages them. To heat it up, it would actually heat it up more if you had clear plastic over it. because especially through the cold months, that would be more effective. You know, everybody thinks that black soaks up the heat. Well, it does, but it doesn't transmit it inside. You don't get as much greenhouse effect as you do with clear plastic.
Oh, but with the clear plastic, though, the weeds would grow, right?
Correct. So that's what I'm saying. In the warm months, the black works better. In the cold months, you might be better served with clear. But if you're just going to use one for both, I would go with the opaque for both.
Okay. And I guess my question is that, so once a pile is complete, you do keep it covered all the time.
Well, you can, is what I'm saying, especially once it's complete. If you're just constantly getting lots of rainfall, as we are now, mm-hmm. it's going to leach a lot of nutrients out of that once it's been composted. So
it's a good way to do it.
The thing that you don't want to do is to tarp it, and then it doesn't get enough moisture to complete the process. So
keep an eye on it.
I think, yes, if you're in a season when it's very active, I would suggest maybe that would work better uncovered, mm-hmm. Especially, you know, because if it's working really well, it's going to heat up a lot, and you don't want to melt the tarp. So I think through most of the year, it's probably okay to cover it, but it's not necessarily good to cover it all the time, I guess is my bottom line.
Okay, well, hopefully that helps Melvin. And we received a post from John on Facebook. What does he have to say?
Well, he wants to know, when is the best time to plant Brussels sprouts? And what would I recommend? I suspect this is somebody who's heard me rant about this in the past. it just gets to me when I go into a garden center in March and they have these beautiful Brussels sprout plants. And although Brussels sprouts are a cool season crop, they're also a long cool season crop. So if you put them in spring, they start trying to make sprouts when the weather has gotten really hot. And two things happen. First of all, they don't make nice tight little sprouts. Mm-hmm. They kind of blow open. And the second thing is they develop like 10 times the bitterness factor that they would otherwise. I recommend to people, if you want your children never to like Brussels sprouts, feed them to them from the garden in July.
I think that's my parents must have done.
And they'll be cured. So the correct time to do that is with the more modern hybrid Brussels sprouts, which have a relatively shorter season, would be to start the seeds by mid-June, and then you have transplants by mid-July. You put the transplants in the garden mid-July. You're going to have to be careful with watering and things. You're going to have to keep the cabbage caterpillars off of them, you know, so they're going to need some sort of an insect control thing. And then you get them through, and then as September, as the weather starts to moderate, gets cooler, the rains usually come back if we've had a drier late summer. And as the weather cools, the days get shorter, they just luxuriate in that. The sprouts form nice and tightly. They grow to nice size, and they're much sweeter and not nearly as bitter as the ones who have tried to happen in midsummer.
So it's best to start them from seed, and you start them inside?
Not necessarily. You could start them just in a sheltered spot outside, so they're not getting baked by the sun. The summer sun in June and July, you know, it would heat the soil surface up to like 120, 140 degrees. So maybe in partial shade, mm-hmm. Just in a cell pack, so they're easy to transplant. But they don't need to be inside at all. They just outside. But again, you'll need to control insects on them because...
And how would you recommend doing that?
Insects?
Yes.
Well, Bacillus thuringiensis, there's a strain, the Kurstaki strain, is good for caterpillars and only caterpillars, so you don't get off target or too far off target with that.
You mentioned, what was that, the grub that you mentioned or the Brussels sprouts? I'm showing my ignorance here, everybody.
Bacillus thuringiensis is a disease of caterpillars.
Okay.
That you apply, they munch on it, and they die. It comes in a concentrated form. You dilute it, spray it on the plants, and only caterpillars that are chewing on your cabbage or cauliflower or whatever eat it. You know, because a monarch butterfly, for instance, is going to flutter by and decide it wants to eat a cabbage because they only like milkweeds. The only other thing I would say is if you get into like an heirloom Brussels sprout, like there's some Reuben Red and mm-hmm. some other ones, they're much longer season. So with those, I would probably back those up to maybe the 1st of June. Last year, I saw a local garden center that had mm-hmm. a few cabbage family transplants in the proper season for a fall crop, which is much better weather for cabbage family. But that doesn't happen too much. But if you have a local grower that you can talk to, just have them start a few of them for you because they'll be happy for the business in midsummer because their spring has pretty much died down. Fall mm-hmm. hasn't happened yet. So if you can talk somebody into doing that, that would be ideal. But it's not that difficult to start them yourselves, and you get a much better variety selection if you can go and buy the seeds from a catalog.
And once they're ready to transplant, do you then they can go into full sun at that point, or should they grow in the shade?
Well, if they've been growing outside, mm-hmm. They should be pretty acclimated to ultraviolet, and you know, unless you've been in the semi-darkness, they should be able to stand it pretty well. If you're worried, you could just stand something up like an old shingle or something so they get a little shade partially during the day. But basically they're okay outside at that point.
Okay, perfect. Our next question comes from Denise, who also wrote through Facebook, and she wanted to know, is there any way to keep basil from turning black in the fall before bringing it into the home for winter? What do you suggest?
Bring it in sooner. The basil season here in our part of the Midwest is from Memorial Day to about Labor Day, which is, what is that, it's about
May to September?
Yeah, it's kind of 3 months. Mm-hmm. Once you get into September, if the nights start to get down below 50 degrees, basil doesn't take that well. It acts almost like it's been frosted at 45 degrees or whatever. So the only way to keep it from blackening is to keep it away from not just frosty temperatures, but cool temperatures.
Okay. I love basil. In the summer, I put it in lots of things, but I have a hard time growing it, so.
Well, there's a downy mildew disease that's come into the Midwest in the last 5 or 6 years, or maybe a little longer than that, that's really raised cane with it. Later in the season, the spores get in and it just discolors the leaves and causes problems. I think in a mixed home garden kind of a situation, it would be a little less mm-hmm. virulent. We have a big basil grower up in the part of the state where I'm from, and they were just wiped out by it. So they had to come up with some controls scenarios. But
if that happens, so is there a way to help it, or do you have to just rip the plants up?
Well, preventing it would be what you would try to do and just have good aeration. You know, don't crowd the plants in together. But once once it's in the planting, there's really not a good organic solution. And a lot of home gardeners don't really want to be out there with a lot of chemicals trying to control it. So it's one of those where it's if you can prevent it, that's a good thing. Once you see it, it's probably a good idea to dry a bunch of basil and and go from there, because it sadly is really really nasty. And you know, I talk to some people and they say, well, I really haven't had a problem with that, and that's good. And then other people say, oh my goodness, it just wiped me out. So I think I hope it's a matter of you know, maybe spreading your basil plants out as opposed to having a basil patch.
Right.
And then having lots of other things in between. But,
and is it transferable to other plants? Do we know?
I think it's pretty specific to basil, although some of the other things in the mint family might might show some susceptibility. I think it's mainly just for the genus Osimum.
Okay, great. And we have one more question from Kathy, if you can help us with that, Chuck.
Okay, Kathy wants to know, what lettuces would you recommend for growing in a salad table? I think the short answer would be, what lettuces do you like? The one lettuce that we can't do a good job with here in any season is iceberg-type lettuce. It wants a steady, coolish temperature, but it doesn't want it to be cold at night. So you get those dry valleys in California, and that's perfect.
Right.
But you get to central Illinois, and inevitably we either frost at night or we get too hot for it during the day. And so those don't work too well. Typically, the leaf lettuces work well for us. The butterhead-type lettuces mm-hmm. work really well for us. I haven't had quite as much success with, like, the romaines, but I think their romaines are still way better than the iceberg types. And then, you know, today you can go into most of the mail order catalogs and you get page after page after page of lettuce. You know, you used to be, if you could find a red leaf lettuce, that was the red leaf lettuce that you would get. Today you can choose between like a page and a half of red leaf lettuces. You know, some are frilly and some are more like a romaine. I think generally speaking, just choose what don't choose iceberg, and then anything else you choose will probably work okay.
Is arugula classed as a lettuce?
It is not.
Ah, okay.
It's actually more of a cold crop. It's more like a cabbage family.
So that doesn't grow very well here.
Well, it grows really fast, and again, it's in the very cool part of the season. So if you can get it out first thing in the spring, mm-hmm. you can harvest it, you know, just before the hot weather gets here, and does okay, but then it's going to shoot up to seed as soon as it gets hot. It comes very quickly, so I would start that maybe in August, and then you'll have it in September and October
okay.
in the fall. So it's you have to kind of, you know, unless you live in San Diego or somewhere where it's 72 degrees every day, you kind of need to look at your local climate and kind of observe what's going on, and then look at what you're trying to grow and how long it takes to grow, and then try to fit them into the niches where the temperature is most conducive to what you're trying to grow.
Okay, perfect, because we love arugula in our house, and we are doing our first vegetable garden this year. So August we should probably do.
Well, yeah, and if we don't get held up too much by this strange weather, you might be able to sneak in a patch, because it really comes quickly, almost akin to radishes, which only take a month or so. So if you can get it in, even in April, you mm-hmm. should do all right, because you'd be harvesting it in May and that would be okay. But it's going to be much easier to get it and keep it longer in the fall.
Okay, perfect. I have one more question for
okay.
you. If you were a herb, what herb would you be and why?
Well, let's say French tarragon.
French tarragon.
Well, French tarragon is a sterile chromosome derivative. Well, I don't know if I want to be a sterile chromosome derivative now that I think about it. But it can only be propagated. This isn't helping at all.
Keep on digging that hole, Chuck.
The reason I like French tarragon is that it's a very strong flavor, and it kind of makes its own way, which I don't know if that describes me, but it describes maybe who I would like to be. I don't know.
Hey, that's good. Be what you want to be, right? Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Very informative, and I hope that everyone has learned something. I know I have. Thank you for coming in.
Well, you're welcome.
Many thanks to our listeners for joining us for this episode of the Mid-American Gardener podcast. Mid-American Gardener is a production of Illinois Public Media. This episode was produced and hosted by me, Victoria Shepherd. Executive producer was Lisa Brultz. Find us on the web at midamericangardener.org, where you can stream us as many times as you like. Episodes are also available on iTunes, Stitcher, and the NPR One app. Please do subscribe and rate with abandon. And send in your questions via email, Facebook, or leave us a voicemail at 217-300-8224. As always, we'd love to hear from you. Thanks for joining us. I'll be back in a couple of weeks with another expert. In the meantime, the weather is hopefully warming up, so start deciding what you're going to be doing out in the garden, and we'll be back soon with the next podcast. Thanks.